What do you see of the bigger mistakes that coaches making?
Coaches don't ask for clients. They just post reels and Instagram stories all the time. Like, no, man, you got to get out there. Know your community.
What is a successful business in the first place?
I think what a lot of people's main goal should be is make enough money to pay your bills and have a decent life and help people. Don't shoot for the stars when you have no idea what's going to happen. Yeah.
What is your philosophy on marketing yourself?
It's a lot like dating, where if you're desperate, everybody kind of knows it. You can kind of see it.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Dr. Joey, nutrition science PhD and founder of Fit for Life Academy. In this episode, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Mike Dola and discuss how he built his successful nutrition coaching business, Stronger You, which allowed him to retire at the age of 40, which is super cool. Let me tell you, this has to be one of my favorite episodes so far. It's the first time I talked to somebody on the show about something other than nutrition and exercise. So it was extremely refreshing and enjoyable. I hope you guys enjoy this episode as much as I did. Let's get right into it. What's up, Mike? How are you doing, my man?
Good, Joey. Happy to be here, man. Thank you for having me.
Of course. No, thank you for taking time to be here today. Would you mind letting the audience know who you are, what your background is, and we'll start the conversation there?
Yeah, it's a long story, so we'll try to keep it concise. But regular dude from Newburgh, New York. Didn't really know what I wanted to do growing up. Ended up at community college, worked in banking for 7 years. Finally broke out of that, went into HR and realized that I need to work in an industry I like. And I want to see if I could make a living doing something I enjoy versus just showing up to an office all the time. I wasn't formally educated in the field of nutrition or fitness. So I started to think, how can I break into this field in the absolute easiest way possible? Thought about getting NASM certified, bailed on that, decided to do the easiest thing that I could find, and that was affiliate with CrossFit. So I got a weekend certification, opened a little garage gym, had no idea what I was really doing, even though I was passionate personally about fitness and nutrition. Didn't really work out, and I had a coach myself for nutrition named Trevor Cashy, which some people may know. He is not the most popular person in the field, but he is one of the smartest people I have ever met. One of the most wise guys I've ever found. He was a PhD at 23, basically told me, you know what you're doing with nutrition. You could probably do this. So I dropped the CrossFit affiliation because nobody cared about working out in my cold garage. I couldn't do it very long because I still worked full time. You know, I had like a 45-minute commute. I'm working 9 to 5. And I realized if I did nutrition and I got certified in that, I can help people on my cell phone, hide in the bathroom, open up spreadsheets on work computers like a terrible employee and maybe make this thing happen. And then things kind of blew up from there. So I don't know if you want me to keep going or you want to take a break, ask some questions.
Yeah, and, totally. What year was that around?
This was 2014. I was affiliated with CrossFit. 2015, I broke off and just did the online nutrition thing as a part-time after and during work thing.
And what was your job at the time as well?
I was in human resources at a company that provided nursing staffing services to medically fragile kids. So it was a decent job in terms of what it did for the world. It just wasn't where I wanted to be all the time. It's actually funny because we didn't have direct deposit and a lot of my job was doing payroll. Mm. So the writing is on the wall that job probably isn't a thing that's going to be a long time journey. So I'm like, man, I got to get out of here. Life is too short to do what you don't want to do all day.
Yeah. And when you were starting your personal nutrition business, what did your life really look like in terms of like workload? And the reason why I asked this is because you hear differing opinions, right? Where individuals talk about like needing to grind hard, which I agree with to a degree. And the other aspect of it is that you need work-life balance and you need to be able to enjoy the entire journey. So what was your life like at the moment? And do you regret anything? Would you change anything?
So no, I wouldn't change anything because the story that was written was perfect for what happened. But I don't think those two things have to conflict. I was a maniac with how much attention I gave to the business and how much I wanted to work. But for me, it was always play. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I was basically high off of helping people with their nutrition. And the genesis of starting was just like a lot of the things you say, there's so much nonsense out there and everyone is so confused. I was like, no, man, it's so much easier. And this is what was at like the tail end of paleo, where people were primed for something new. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, if you just like know how much you're eating, you can still enjoy in moderation. I'm going to show you how to do that. And I'm going to package this thing up in a way that I didn't think was really being offered in terms of like total, just like a such a good approach for people in terms of what they had to do from a scientific standpoint, what they can do with a community of like-minded individuals, what they can do with accountability, customer service, goofiness. Like, I'm like you, man. I'm not overly professional. We are professionals, but we are not these people that seem like we're in suits and ties all day.
Yeah.
And that was just a fun approach for people. And it got really crazy really quickly in a good way.
Yeah, I'm sure. So I'd definitely love for you to continue the story of how you continue to grow your coaching business. Because if I'm correct here, you started just one-on-one coaching, you working with individuals, correct?
Yeah, that was it. It was it wasn't these meal plans. It wasn't supplements. It was just like, hey, here's about the amount I want you to eat. Here's some food ideas. Here's maybe some timing suggestion based on what you want to do. And I didn't really have a plan how I was going to launch this business. I was just that guy talking online all the time about what I could do and my philosophies around food. And people started to pick up on it. I had a lot of what the kids call haters talking about, oh, you're not an RD, you're overstepping, you shouldn't be talking about this stuff, who are you to just start? And it was probably because I would say sugar isn't the devil that everybody thinks. So automatically I'm a bonehead to
people. Yeah.
But I had enough people in my circles, and luckily I had someone, her name was Cindy. I happened to be at a CrossFit competition and I was the judge for her event. And we met through that, and she was the first person that ever hired me. She owned a small, like a strength and conditioning gym locally, and was like, hey, I need help. I know how to do all the fitness stuff. I just need some accountability and help with nutrition. So I went to her place and I had to just make up a price. I'm like, $40 a month, 12-week commitment, let's call it $120. And for the people out there that don't want to do the math, that's $10 a week to work with me. And that's crazy to think, right? We have all our colleagues that are like, I'm high ticket. There's people charging thousands of dollars for what I offered for $120.
Yeah.
And I just gave them, these people, such good service and attention that she opened the door to her gym for me. Basically, do you want to help all these people? And I was at work just getting text messages. Hey, Cindy told me to text you. Do you do nutrition stuff? And I'm like, yeah, what's your story? Like, let's chat. And of course, I'm doing this while I'm working full time. Like,
yeah.
So it was, you know, I couldn't be in my garage training anybody. So I'm like, let me just talk on the cell phone. And people just started getting results. Like, Cindy was at a point where she was one of those people that was in really good shape, but she wanted to lose, call it 15 pounds. She lost like, I forget the amount, but she had abs in 6 weeks. And everyone was like, okay, this crazy guy talking about sugar on the internet seems to be onto something. And then it got like, it created this FOMO in a lot of these CrossFit circles that I knew. They were like, all right, we got to get Mike in here to be our nutrition guy too. Mm-hmm. Because at the time they didn't want to touch it. And I still think that most gyms shouldn't manage their own nutrition because it's just another job for them to do. So like partnering with like people like me at the time, it was super helpful because all these people were such a tight-knit community. This person would tell this person, that person would tell that person. And it was basically like I started to notice early, it was like a family tree.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cindy was like grandma and grandpa, and then just bang, it just spread. And like we were covering all these different areas for a while.
Yeah, that's super cool, man. You know, one thing I was picking up on when you were talking about your general philosophy and approach to nutrition, you're essentially talking about flexible dieting, teaching people how to track calories, the importance of energy balance, which I guess now is fairly common knowledge for most individuals. But I know that back in the day, especially around that 2012 to 2016 timeframe, there still is a lot of confusion about nutrition, but perhaps more confusion and lack of understanding of basic principles, right? And I think what's cool is that it's a perfect example of not needing to overcomplicate things, right? Yep. And I think we all fall into this, that if we're going to have a business idea that's going to be successful, it has to be super complex and super novel, when the reality is that it needs to be effective. It needs to be helpful. It needs to be simple to implement. And it doesn't need to be overly complicated. Was that something that you gave thought to, or did it just happen?
Yeah, 100%. It was, why are people failing every single plan they're on? Well, because it's too damn complicated. So really, most of my clients at the time were either, I want to perform better at CrossFit or whatever my sport is, or I want to lose fat. I'm like, all right, well, what do these people need to do? They need to identify how much they're eating. And in most cases, they need to create a small deficit. So they need to know what macros may be in that case. They need to eat sufficient protein. They need to eat sufficient carbs, fat, and that will give them the energy balance. And that will just give us the data. And I wasn't married to these exact numbers. Like, I think people misunderstand what like macro tracking, flexible dieting is. I think they think they need to be perfect. And there's this like perfect calculation for every individual. It's like, you could give me the same person 50 different times and the macros I give them to start could be different. I'm more interested in the trends after the fact.
Sure.
So I was just picking up on, like, I was just playing food detective really early. I'm like, all right, I throw these numbers at this person. They do X. Here's what's happening. Okay. If I adjust this, here's the behavior that it's encouraging. Okay. That's a mistake. Let me go back to the drawing board and redo it. And I was just learning on the job and from like people and that I was following and the science out there. And it was like, it was rather easy because the problem was most people just had no idea what they were eating on a consistent basis. And that, I mean, we see it, right? I'm eating 1,000 calories. I'm not losing weight. I would bet my life that you were not eating 1,000 calories. Yeah. You just kind of do it some of the times, right?
Yeah.
So I just solved for that. And people were like, oh, damn, it's this easy? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It really is.
That's cool, man. And then how did you go from where you started to where your business got to eventually?
Yeah. I just kept doing what I was doing. I was posting everywhere. I was in all these groups that were like fitness related, like CrossFit Masters. I was in there before I was of age to be a CrossFit master. So that was kind of one of my, I guess, like I infiltrated the group, you could say, but I didn't mean to be like an outcast. I would just answer these questions. I would answer the questions where people were, rather than just saying things just online and hoping everyone came across it. So I just kept spreading the word. I did that full-time job and Stronger You coaching for 13 months. And then I finally was able to quit my job. I was one of those people that came up in my career as an underachiever. And even when things were really, really good, I still thought it was going to blow up in my face. So at this point, I'm 8, 9, 10 months in or whatever, and I'm making more per month than I was in my full-time job per year.
Wow.
And I still said to myself, this is just not going to last. Why am I going to bail and lose insurance? So what did I do? I started to prep. Again, remember, we didn't have direct deposit. So I had a drawer full of paychecks that I was saving. I maxed out my 401k and I was like, I can do it. The math is there. The trends are there. We're going up every month. I'm going to put in a month notice because I wanted to be a good employee and I'm going to tell them I'm leaving. And I was so scared because when it's just you have no idea what can happen. Like, I could break my wrist and go out of business because I can't type anymore. Like, that's these thoughts that were going in my head. I remember the day I quit. It was, I think, Memorial Day weekend, and there was a cell phone issue and I lost service. I couldn't use my cell phone. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to go out of business. I built this thing off my service and I can't even answer people. And it kept getting busier. And my wife, girlfriend at the time, now wife, was like, we're going to be fine if it doesn't work. And in my head, I'm like, this cannot not work, because now that I tasted this, I am unemployable. I can never work another regular job again. So I am going to figure this out. And that was always like, it was healthy paranoia. I was always on top of things, and it probably made me a little bit crazy to work for at times. I wasn't a jerk, but I was very aware of everything that was going on. And shortly after that, I was like, oh, crap. I thought I was quitting my job to get more free time, but turns out when I put in more time and I don't have two jobs, I just have one, I'm going to make it busier and I'm going to need to hire people. So I started to hire other coaches who had the same philosophies, which is, oh, you believe in nutritional science? Cool. You have good customer service. You have a lot of experience with this stuff yourself. You want to try to do this? And at the time I was like, yeah, maybe these people can make like, I don't know, 15K a year. And that I was grossly mistaken about that.
Yeah, you know, I feel the same way pretty much every day in terms of what you were sharing, like the fear of the unknown, really. And it's funny because my wife is the same. She's really supportive and she definitely believes in me more than I believe in myself, in the sense of like, whenever we have a big life decision. So for example, like we're in the process of buying a house at the moment. Yep. And it's a big difference from where we're living at the moment. And anytime I have one of these big, we'll call it like turning points in life, I do a lot of like even unintentional self-reflection and I just get so much fear. And some of it is rational, but some of it is also very irrational, right? Like I talk to my wife and I'm like, you know, everything I do, it could just go to shit tomorrow. Like I could lose my social media. I could like, I may not be able to get another client next month, when all of the data so far has said the exact opposite, right? Like I get clients every month, like my business is growing, my social media is growing, but it's this weird fear of like, man, what if I fail? The other side of that is that I feel like if you don't have that feeling at all, that's not a good sign, right? No. Because
you'll get complacent. And I never felt that, like the whole journey. I was like, because I always knew it could stop. Mm-hmm. Anything can happen. There's trends that change in our industry. There's regulations that come out. There's competition. There's so many things that could stop it. But I knew that no one, no one can take away what you know and who you are. And that's what we were selling to people. And that's what, like, when we brought on coaches, they just saw the vibe of the company and the culture we built. And they were like, holy crap. Like, it was crazy. It was like a lot of those people were people just like me working jobs that, like, they were just underachieving in. They didn't have a really, like, steady career and they just needed a shot. And that was like so cool to create for people, because I did it for myself. And then I was like, holy crap, I can not only help people change their lives with food, I can give people jobs that they like, where they make a good living and help people. And we had, like I said, we thought my COO, my best friend who came on board maybe like a year and a half in or 2 years in, he left Amazon, corporate Amazon, to help me out. And he's like, dude, you're going to have 50 coaches one day. And I called him an effing idiot. Like, it's a famous story internally. I was like, you're an effing idiot if you think that. There's no way. And then shortly after, we employed almost 100 people at one point.
That's super cool. That's really, really cool. It's a great experience to have people who work for you and are excited to work for you. And you can see how positively you impact their life with the stuff that you're doing. I have technically two people who work for me. One is my business partner who's helping me launch a product that we're going to be launching soon. And then another person who does all of my media stuff. And I think I'm a good boss, but it's just really cool because you can see how appreciative they are. I'm extremely appreciative of them. It's a win-win relationship. You see how like the business growth positively impacts both of you guys. It's something that you don't really get to experience unless you do something like this.
Yeah. And it's not always, what is it? Unicorns and rainbows.
Totally.
Like there's some days where like, oh, they hate me today, or, you know, some random thing. You know, as you grow, your impact as a boss, like when it's me and six people is different than when it's me and 85 people.
Sure. So I want to talk about, you know, you were able to build an extremely successful coaching business in a relatively short time. And you went from somebody who worked in HR to getting a nutrition certification to starting to work with clients. And then I'm assuming you didn't have any formal business education background either, correct?
Yeah, just I had a community college business degree, but it was like, here's a class on entrepreneurship. Here's a class on business math. Yeah. Here's a class on marketing. Like everything I learned was from playing this game and reading random books and watching YouTube videos and podcasts.
Yeah.
That's it. Someone accidentally said I had an MBA one time. And I was like, no, I thought I would be in the NBA when I was a dumb 8-year old.
Same here.
But I think you're Michigan. Yeah.
Yeah. That's super cool, man. So I want to transition the conversation and really talk about what makes a coaching business successful, right? And how did you start thinking in terms of frameworks to be able to scale, how to delegate work, all that stuff. But before we go into it, I would love if you share whatever you feel comfortable sharing with in terms of how long did it take you to get your business to where it got to and how big did it get? How many employees did you have, clients, all that stuff?
Yeah, it was pretty open about all this. So it started in 2015, just me and a cell phone yelling on the internet about food stuff. 13 months later, was able to quit my job. That first year, it was, I think, April it started. So the first year wasn't a full year. I think we did like 52,000. And then it was like 776. Then we went to 4.5 million. Then like 7 around there, almost 10 at one point. Ended up being approached in 2018. Someone wanted to buy the business. The parent company of Anytime Fitness, they were like, hey, we don't have a nutrition partner. What do you think? We went to their conference. It was awesome. We were like, whoa, this culture is crazy. Mm-hmm. But ultimately I ended up turning it down at that point. Just, to me, it wasn't the right time.
Okay.
I still loved every second of every day at work, but they reapproached us, in 2020, ended up selling at that point. My wife was pregnant, starting a family. I was like, all right, like this makes sense. They have reach that I don't have. So let me do that. But in 2019, we were on one of America's fastest growing companies. That was kind of crazy. And I want people to know, like, we didn't do this with ads or traditional marketing or anything. Like, we literally just did a good job and gave people what they wanted and got the word out everywhere. And we had a culture internally where members were so happy to share with their friends and family, both in person and all over their social media, all over Facebook groups. Anytime someone would be like, hey, does anyone have any nutrition ideas for me? Boom, Stronger You. Boom, Mike Dola. Boom, some of our coaches. And I was such a lunatic. I was everywhere. So this whole thing about boundaries and balance, it's later. Worry about that stuff later. That's why I sold the job, the company. Because I personally, I could not do both at the time to the extent that I wanted to. I think it's possible. But I also think part of why we won that game in that era was because of my attention to all this stuff. So it was like a 7-year journey or so. And I loved almost every second of it. It was like the most fun I've ever had, like building that business with a bunch of my buddies, you know.
It was crazy. Yeah, man.
Yeah, it was so fun, man. But there was a lot of luck in there too. Like, it wasn't just this like idea, this execution. It wasn't the most structured approach. It was just like, we're helping a lot of people. How do we multiply like gremlins and just keep offering this? And we had world-class NPS scores. Like, we were just dialed in because it was what we had to do. People were like, here's my money, help me. And we felt obligated and just had the right team of people to provide these services.
Dude, that's so cool, man. Even just like as you're speaking there, I'm like, damn, I'm hoping to be able to do some of these things in the future too. It's definitely very, very inspiring. So I wanted to ask you directly, what do you see are some of the bigger mistakes that you see coaches making in the sense of like, what's preventing people from having a solo coaching practice where maybe they do okay to get a full client load, then really being able to scale that into a successful business. What is a successful business in the first place? How does somebody make that transition?
I guess it all depends like what you want. Like I never wanted what I ended up with. Like I would have been like, cool, that's awesome if that's going to happen. But my main goal, and I think what a lot of people's main goal should be, is make enough money to pay your bills and have a decent life and help people. Don't shoot for the stars when you have no idea what's going to happen. Because it's like our fat loss clients. Somebody signs up, they're like, I want to lose 100 pounds. It's like, well, would you be happy with 75? You probably would. Just like I would have been happy with like $50,000 a year. Like I would have figured it out. My wife was doing well as a teacher in New York. So like we would have been cool. We far surpassed that, but that was never the goal. So I think people should just focus on like the pins that can be knocked down, not 15 games later. And I think there's like my biggest critique of the industry, especially right now, is most of the potential customers want fat loss, different looks, better health, but people are not talking about two of those things. They're only talking about health. And I feel like the industry is almost shaming people about wanting to look different or lose weight. And I think ultimately they're losing out on the biggest piece of marketing there is, which is the word like, I can help you lose weight. Like, yes, we want it body fat. Yes, we want to do it in a healthy way. Yes, we want it sustainable. But I think there are certain groups out there that are making a lot of us scared to talk about it because they might come after us. How dare you focus on people's bodies? Are you saying the former is less than the current if they're losing weight? So like, you know, I never was afraid of that.
Yeah.
You know, like give me a before and after picture. I'm going to tell you a story about it, but the potential customers are looking for that. And if we're not going to be the one to give that to them, some other coach might be. And a lot of times it's going to be a crappier company. Like it might be one of these like crap crash diet approaches.
Yeah.
So do we have like this moral obligation to be the one that does that for them in a sustainable, healthy way while we educate the hell out of them? Yeah. And that was always my big thing. Like I want these people to be the smartest in the room. Some of our best coaches were clients of ours who just took an interest in this and were like, damn, you're perfect for this job. And they were amazing. And I think it's like in coaching, one thing I notice is, let me back up for a second. If you think about business, it's always the business saying, what is the best thing I can do for this customer to make them come back, to make them buy more stuff, to make them tell everyone about me? It's to put yourself second and to put the customer first. And in coaching, I don't know where this is coming from. Maybe it's all the business coaches. I don't know. But it's telling everyone to say, basically, paint your ideal life and then hope that the clients are okay with that level of service and attention. And to me, that translates to underwhelming responses, unrealistic timelines when responses are going to come in and go out, too many like rules, like, hey, here's what I'm going to do. You can only do this. Only talk to me at this point. Oh, by the way, here's exactly what you need to do the program. If you're not doing this, you're not on the program. And I think there are some, like, don't get me wrong, there are some coaches in this industry that have earned that right to have people do exactly what they want. A buddy of mine has people just email on a desktop for their check-in. I wouldn't do that to start. So like, if he's successful and his business is thriving, cool, do what you want to do.
Yeah.
But for most of us starting out, we don't have clients knocking our doors down.
Sure.
We don't have clients referring every single person they know. We did at Stronger You. We had some people refer 40 people. Like, and again, another point is pricing. People start too high and they're like, oh, well, you didn't. The experts out there will say, oh, well, you didn't show enough value. That's why they didn't sign up. It's like, well, not everyone wants to be sold. Like for us, it was like, we're just going to put our stuff out there. And whoever wants it is going to see it and be like, I'm a bonehead if I don't sign up for this. It's priced well. It works. It seems really cool over there. Like the CEO seems like a decent person, especially these times where no one wants to do business with businesses. People want to do business with people. Mm-hmm. And there's no better example than that in coaching. Yeah. They're signing up for you and your brand and your service. Just give the customer what they need, not what you want your ideal life today to be, because you can adjust later. Like as we grew, I could step back from certain things. Mm-hmm. But if I'm a coach now, like I joke, if I come back to the industry, I'm going to take everyone's clients because I'm going to give better service and better results. And I'm going to tell people I can do that. Nobody does that. Coaches don't ask for clients. They don't put themselves out there. They just post reels and Instagram stories all the time. Like, no, man, you gotta get out there. Know your community. I bet you almost everyone here that's in a neighborhood, there's probably like, what is that app? Out Next Door.
Heard
like
of it.
There's groups on Facebook. You could dominate your entire town if you're known as the nutrition person or the online coach. And these are the things I was doing. I was just going everywhere. So there's a lot of coaches that are offering a little bit subpar service based on what they think people need, which is not who they are. Like it's like the tracking thing now. A lot of coaches are like, oh, you don't need to do that. Yeah, easy for you to say, John, the fit pro, like you love this stuff. Mary doesn't like this. She wants everything but the fitness stuff. So just because you got to where you are without the methods that she should do, it doesn't mean she shouldn't do it. It means you need to experience it so you can offer it. And that was like the best education I ever got was tracking food and knowing like, oh, wow, I just blew it for breakfast. Guess I got a plan.
Yeah.
Right? Like this is we could talk about nutrition stuff. These little strategies are why people are not successful. And I think coaches that once you start getting the experience for yourself and and with others, you become such a good problem solver. And I think that was one of the benefits that I had was I was a CEO of a company, but all I did was really talk to people about food stuff. So I had like 100 times the reps as the average person with the same amount of years in the field because I didn't go in all these spreadsheets and all these projections and all this business crap. I was like, where are the people? What do they need? How can I be the guy that helps them? And I was like, oh, cool. You're signing up. Here's an awesome coach for you. Boom. And we just did that 50,000 times.
Hey guys, some of you may not know that I'm the scientific advisor for a supplement company called Outwork Nutrition. I help with the formulation of new products to help ensure that they're effective and backed by science. Unlike many other supplement companies out there, we don't rely on exaggerated claims or flashy marketing tactics. Instead, we let the science speak for itself. We take pride in formulating products that deliver real results, helping you achieve your fitness goals in a meaningful way. If you're in the market for supplements like protein powder, pre-workout, or recovery products, make sure to check us out at outworknutrition.com. And as a thank you for being an avid listener of this podcast, use code Joey for an exclusive discount at checkout. You can find the link to our website down in the description of this podcast episode. Remember, our goal is to empower you with science-backed supplements that truly make a difference. Choose Outwork Nutrition and elevate your fitness to new heights.
Yeah, that's a great perspective, man. You know, even as you're speaking there, I'm reflecting on definitely mistakes that I've made and still make based off the stuff that you're saying with regard to how I approach social media specifically, right? And I have some reasons for it.
You do great on social media.
Sorry?
I talked to my buddy Derek about your social media. It's awesome.
Thank you, man.
Yours is awesome. So yeah.
Thank you. I'm always trying to improve it. But I do exactly what you said of like posting a bunch of reels that are educational. And like I was saying, I have some reasons as to why I do that at the moment. Because I really try to use, I guess it all comes down to what the person's strategy is, right? Because for me, right. I use my Instagram specifically as like the top of funnel, try to get as many eyes as possible, and then maybe transition people into my podcast where they get to connect with me a little bit more. And then hopefully from there into a paying customer, right?
Yep.
Because for me, I've had a lot of success with using social media the way I do, because I've found something that works for me, right? I think that's another difficult thing. Right. Like, because now I've had a lot of success with social media really over the past 8 months.
Where I think, right. And you have out, a, you have a lot of, how many followers do you have now?
Around 221 around there.
Right. That, so just for people listening, that is so many. The average coach is like 800 to 2,500, call it. So do you know how many more chances someone like you has versus them? So they should not, just like people should not have copied Stronger You in 2019, 2020, they should not copy what you do because they are not reaching as many people. Like they should still do stuff, but you can probably rely on that. The average coach cannot. Those average coaches should literally, every single person should know what they do that they meet. And then, you know, people are nosy. Oh, what do you do for a living? Like, drum up these conversations, meet people. And I say this as a dude that was so shy growing up. I was just blending in, man. No one knew who the hell I was. But then I was like, well, this is the difference between me going to work in a place I don't want to work for, what, 40 more years? Or I can maybe just post and talk about what I want. And all it takes is to put myself in more uncomfortable situations that, by the way, aren't really that uncomfortable. Usually you meet like a lot of really cool people, and most people are pretty receptive to just chatting. And my buddy Derek, who I was talking about, I remember at Raise the Bar conference last year, we went to a gas station before the conference, and he comes out telling me about this dude he just met in there and tells me about his work schedule and how stressed out the guy is. And I'm like, how the hell did you get all that information? We went in there for protein shakes, man. But that's the difference. Yeah. Like, are you willing to talk to random people all over the place? Or do you just want to say things online hoping clients sign up?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I would probably play both games.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense too, you know. And I agree with you that perhaps one of the most important thing is definitely the quality of your service, right? Like making sure you have a good quality service, because even though it may start slow, if you're actually helping people achieve what they want to achieve, the word's going to spread. It may take more time for one person than another, but that's at the very core, the most important thing, because if you have a really shitty service, good luck getting people to come back, and the word's going to spread that you have a shitty service as well. Right. So that's number one.
And sorry to cut you off, to think about what your customer wants.
Yeah.
Like if you're like a habit-based coach and they feel like they are getting nothing from you, like they probably want some sort of result. So identify what those results are and figure out a way to measure it. And for us, we used to do surveys, and it wasn't just like, are you happy with like your fat loss results? Like people had improved relationship with food. So this is another thing that I rant about when everyone's like, oh, tracking messes people up. No, I have more data than most people that it does not. These people improve their relationship with food. Their food education went up. Their families all ate better. They performed better at work. They slept better. Their health improved. Their performance in the gym, their overall stress, everything was better because we got them to eat a little bit differently. So that used to be my marketing, basically. I would say, oh, wow, we have 97% of people said they would recommend us to a friend or family. Google, I'll take the Google screenshot from the survey, post it on my feed, and everyone that sees me thinks, oh, damn, like that program is working and he's showing us it's working. And that's one of my big critiques with a lot of our colleagues is, if I'm acting as a customer, I need to know why I'm choosing you as a coach. Like if I was actually in the market for a coach, there's like three people I'd probably give a shot to right now, because I don't know that people can actually help. I know that they know things, and there's a lot different there. Yeah, big difference there.
That was a big learning curve for me when I joined the industry, because my background is an academic background. I don't have a coaching background, even though I work as a personal trainer, but personal training is very different, right? Like people come into the gym to hire you and you just take them through a workout. It's very different than coaching. And I quickly realized that coaching really, I mean, I'm not going to say it has very little to do with your knowledge, because you have to make sure you're giving good information, but it's actually getting people to implement the information. That's really the hard part.
Right.
And thankfully, I think it's something that you always improve upon just through experience, right? You deal with more people. Oh, yeah. You see how different people react to different things. You learn how to innately respond to one person differently than you do to another. The good and the bad thing is, one, it's a learned skill that anybody can learn if you have some good, I guess, emotional intelligence, right? Because some people, I guess, don't.
Right.
But the downside.
Yeah, try harder next time. Yeah. Try harder. No. Find out what happened. And then you're going to run into things that you didn't even know were a thing. Like, do you know how many people hid food in the trunk of their car from their spouse and they would eat it? And then they would finally tell us after 6 months of like troubleshooting, like these things, like it's just reps, man. You just have to get in there and you have to help enough people. Like I see in some of these groups, like the Precision Nutrition group, I have a client that has that's eating 1,000 calories. They're not losing weight. You get the craziest responses. Oh, they're just not eating enough. No. Where in the world does that happen? Let's play the statistics here. This person got into a position that they want to change because they're the culmination of all their decisions, maybe added 100 pounds of weight over time. That is not a person who has a great grasp on food.
Yes.
They are doing a number of things that they are probably not aware of, some of which they are, many of which they are not. And our job is to find out what those things are without maybe meeting these people, maybe never even having a live conversation with them, because a lot of the stuff we did was just text, and not offend them in the process. That's not easy to do, but it does take some risk sometimes. I think a lot of coaches are a little soft. I'm not saying you need to be David Goggins hard ass, but you do sometimes need to push people because totally. A lot of these people have gotten nothing but like, you'll do better next time their whole life.
Yeah.
And that's gotten them to a place that's like, hey, heart to heart time. Something's going on here. I want you to know I do not judge you for making mistakes. I made them. I know how hard this is. You're living in this body that has a brain that's influencing them to eat because it wants to survive. And you're in an environment that is absolutely crazy. The definition of enough food now is not like it was when we were hunting and gathering. You can get enough calories from a single meal, like a stupid small meal. You can hit your daily limit. And that's the reality. And we have to uncover that for people and make sure they're okay with doing that for a long enough time to see their results come to fruition.
Yeah, totally. The whole chronic under eater thing really gets
Honestly, it's my biggest pet peeve in life. I'm not even talking nutrition. It is the craziest belief on the planet.
It's the same as saying you're a millionaire because you've been making too little money your whole life. It's the same thing, right? Anyways, without going too deep into that, I wanted to talk about, you know, the concept of marketing, because I think this is something people tend to struggle with a ton. Because, you know, while some coaches can benefit from improving their service, I'm sure there are coaches out there that have really good services and have a really hard time getting clients, right? And one thing I've noticed that is a commonality amongst business coaches, particularly business coaches for fitness coaches, is it seems like the number one tip that goes around is DM everybody. DM everybody, cold outreach. Which I'm sure is effective to a degree. I think it also matters how you do it, right? Because there are ways that seem very inauthentic, non-genuine, right? You're not going to reach out to somebody and say, hey, do you need to lose body fat, right? It's a little bit of a sensitive topic. What is your philosophy on marketing yourself? The difference between being pushy with sales versus, for lack of a better term, attracting the type of client you want. I'd love to get your perspective on that.
So I think a lot of this stuff is like, it's almost like, and it's been a while since I was in the dating game, but it's a lot like dating, where if you're desperate, everybody kind of knows it. You can kind of see it.
That's a new way of putting it.
So what is the best advice to say for the dudes out there that are single? The best advice is to become the thing that people cannot resist, is interesting, maybe a little mysterious, and everybody wants to know what's going on over there. That's what you do if you want to, I don't know, meet a guy, meet a girl, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think sales is the same thing. So my thought about it was always, I'm kind of a snob about marketing because I feel like marketing has this undertone of like, convince people who don't really want your service to want your service. So I think you have to be in the right spot, right? So with dating, if you're in the wrong spot, you're obviously not going to find anyone.
Sure.
With fitness nutrition marketing, you have to be in front of all the people that are somewhat interested in you.
Sure.
I don't like a lot of like, I was never a fan of cold outreach. I didn't really even do sales calls for people. I would just call them like, yeah, I'll just answer your questions and talk to you about what we do. So I think the marketing advice and a lot of the business coaches encourage people to be someone they are not to get a result they never even wanted, or a mate, a client, whatever you want to call it, that they never wanted. And I don't think, like, I think of coaching as a relationship business where I don't think it's ever a good idea to try to, and I'll just use the word manipulate, because that's a lot of what marketing is. You're trying to manipulate the way someone's thinking. I don't think it's ever a good idea to manipulate someone to be in a relationship, whether that's a real love relationship or a business relationship. So I always, my marketing was like anti-marketing. I was very clear about that. We do not market. So what does that say to people? What does that say to our potential customers and our customers? We are so good that all of you tell all your friends, but I would have certain tactics there. I would, when we would share stories, I'd be like, hey, can I tag you? Oh yeah, because that will show up on your newsfeed and then your friends will like it.
Yeah.
So then when their friends would comment, I would like their posts and I would say, hey, thanks so much for complimenting our member. And there's just all these places you need to be. But the hard thing with this stuff is a lot of our colleagues don't want to do this stuff. So it's going to be really hard. My luck in this story was I loved to do that stuff and I made jokes about it. I had someone sent me a plaque that said every day I'm hustling. So I would do all these silly things to try to get clients and I would post about it. Like I was putting business cards and books at Barnes and Noble. Someone told me, oh, do you know that's littering? I said, I don't give a crap. Like, come on. Like, I don't think I got a client from it, but what I did do is I posted online and people laugh about it. I just built the brand by doing silly stuff. And it became this, I don't know, this like mystique about the company that like this crazy guy that had a job he didn't like, who wasn't formally trained in the industry, who has no shame about asking his clients to send them more clients to help. And I always framed it like that. I always said, and when they would do it, I would always thank them in our community. Thank you guys so much for mentioning us in that group. Do you know how many more people it's helping? And by the way, how many people here have a job because of you? Like they owned this story just as much as I did. So when you think about corporations, it's always corporate versus customer. There's always this team dynamic. It wasn't like that for us. It was always like, as like stupid and cliche as it sounds, it's like the stronger you family. Like we're all in this together. You clients built our lives. In return, we're going to help you build your life. And I wasn't shy about this story. And I think going back to the desperation thing, I think people are afraid to say, hey, here's my story as a coach. I have a job that I don't love part-time. You never hear about that because I give the impression that all I do is online coaching, but I really need help and I would love to get out of that other job. If you know anyone, can you send them my way?
Yeah.
If you think I can help? They don't want to do that. Instead, they do these other tactics of, I have 5 spots.
Yeah.
No, I have 3 spots. Now I have 2 spots. And I don't blame them because if it works, cool. I just never wanted to do that type of marketing. And it's clear that a lot of this is being influenced by the business coaches in the field. So I just said, why don't you just go off of what actually works and what helps people?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to do that for your whole life? I don't think you want to play that game. I think you want to have fun with it. And I think people are like, going back to the professionalism, people are scared to be goofy. They're scared to be corny. They're scared to be like emotional. Like I had a nickname, Emo Mike. Like I didn't give a shit, man. It was so fun.
Yeah.
And this is the brand that people wanted to support. So you have to be that. If you want to attract clients to your coaching business, you have to think about what will make people want to work with me.
Yeah.
How do you build trust and likability?
What you mentioned about being vulnerable and essentially not being shy or embarrassed about asking for help and sharing where you are and sharing where you want to go, right? That's one philosophy that I've always lived by as well. And not so much from the perspective of getting clients, but just from the perspective of where I've gotten to professionally. Because I get this question often too from people who are younger than me who see me having some success. They want to do the same thing. And they're like, you know, how did you get to do your PhD? And how did you meet this person? How did you meet that person? And my answer is always the same. I straight up just tell them, I just asked, you know, like these people didn't seek me out. People, you know, I guess in some situations, people might seek you out. But when you're trying to grow and do things, like you need to seek people out and you can't have such a big ego that you're unwilling to say, hey, I want to be where you're at. Will you help me? Right. So for my PhD, it was like that. There was a professor I really looked up to. And I said, hey, I would like to be involved in what you do somehow, some way. Do you have a spot for me? And then proving your worth, like putting in the work, right? I did a postdoctoral fellowship with a professor, and his name's Dr. Mike Ormsey. He's very well respected. A ton of people want to work with him. And people have asked me, how'd you get the opportunity to work with him? Well, I built a relationship with him during grad school, and then I just asked if I could be part of it. I then worked with Lane Norton. A lot of people want to work with Lane Norton. How did you get to work with him? I just sent him an email and expressed my appreciation for his work, right? So the same can be applied here, and I've never even thought about it from a coaching perspective. But yes, if you have people that follow you and they care about your content, they inherently care about you and your success as well, right? And I'm sure if you show that you're vulnerable, that you're human and you need help, people will be willing to help. That's a really good point.
They want to. They want to. And like we started to get to the point where we were the big business. And like, you know, we would have a coach that would break off and go do their own thing. Awesome.
Yeah.
Like we would have clients follow them because they were like, oh, he needs it more than you.
Sure.
And you're right. But like for the longest time, we were that story and people loved it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think people are just, we're all a little weird. We're all a little weird, shy and not consistent with what embarrasses ourselves. But like, you're not desperate if you ask for help. You're desperate if you're like a creepy salesperson.
Sure.
And that's what nobody wants. Sure. So like, for example, if you're in these Facebook groups, like I was, it's crystal clear when someone goes in there to post for clients. But what I would do is I wouldn't just give information. I would comment to everyone who had questions. So then people would be like, who is this guy? He's everywhere. They would look me up and they'd be like, oh, Stronger You. He's that dude. And then they would sign up and I would just build this reputation again, not just to get clients, but because it was like the same reason I do it now. I talk about food stuff when I'm like retired from the field because it's so fun. So that's the competitive advantage for a story like this is the dude that started is probably unhinged a little bit in how much he loves to talk about this stuff with people who are drowning in front of him. And they're being thrown the worst trash information available.
Yeah.
I felt obligated. This person has the dumbest answer that they're about to implement. Hell no. I'm going to save them.
Yeah. It's so funny,
client
man.
Or not,
because it does get to the point, like, you know, with a large following, it's quite difficult to manage questions and DMs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And to be completely honest, a lot of times I don't answer many questions because it's just overwhelming and it's a lot. But every once in a while, I get one that I can tell it's from, like, and when I say once in a while, maybe once a day, like that frequent, right? Where it's somebody who, like, you can tell they're genuinely, like, really confused, don't know what to do, and like, they're just asking a simple question. And it's like, man, the stuff I read every day of things people are about to do. And I was like, no, listen, like, don't fucking do Yeah. It's stupid. It's going to take you some time to learn, but like, please, like, listen to this episode of my podcast or implement this. It is a really cool feeling. To summarize what you were saying about marketing, right? Because you were saying, essentially, don't be afraid to be vulnerable. Don't be afraid to be silly, to share what you do. I think we can summarize those things in one simple sentence, which is talk more about what you do, right? Would you say that accurate? Yeah. Show what you do day to day. Show client wins. You know, somebody might know that you're a coach, but somebody else doesn't. To just talk about what you do more frequently, and that, you know, if you have a positive energy about it, you show that you are really passionate about what you do. You actually help people. That energy is infectious.
I think passion is a good way to put it. I think if you're not passionate, to me, you're boring, and no one is attracted to boring.
Yeah.
So how do you, and passion sometimes, depending on who's watching it or reading it, it comes off as, oh, whoa, that's a little intense. Yeah. And I know I come across like that sometimes, but I don't care, because if I piss off two, but have 10 people that like what I say, that's a good ratio for me. And I think playing it safe is why people might not make it. I'm not saying you have to go out there and be offensive, crazy, like purposely. No, but don't be afraid to like plant your flag in the ground on what you believe. And I say this to people, like, people are so scared of what everybody thinks about them. I said, dude, do you know how many people probably think I'm an idiot when I say sugar is okay? More people probably think I'm an idiot than think, wow, that guy knows what he's talking about. Because why everybody says sugar's bad? And I'm like, well, it's bad because everybody overconsumes it. But guess what? I have it every single day. Before I go to bed, my wife and I eat some of her baked goods.
Yeah, if you're afraid of some criticism, you're not going to make it. Because more success you have, the more criticism you have. I get it daily on my posts, man. I share it on my stories because it's really funny. And it's almost become a humorous thing where like my followers really like when I highlight a comment in my stories or something like that.
I think there was one a couple of weeks ago that someone was like, oh, says the guy that doesn't look healthy. I'm like, what? Like, I don't look healthy? Like, what are you talking? Yeah, what are you talking about, man? This, like, these, they get like personal, and people get a little weird, and it's like, it's always over some diet soda. And I was talking to my wife about it. I'm like, don't drink it. If you don't believe us, don't drink it. Drink something else. But don't act like that's the reason someone's unhealthy. It's just not.
Yeah, you know, I'm always baffled by like the people on social media who have really bad information and very large followings. And if there's one thing I can put a finger on that seems to be a commonality in their success, aside from the fact that controversy sells, is really what you were talking about, the importance of passion, right? A lot of these people talk very convincingly. They're very passionate about it. To be quite frank, all of these individuals who share bad information, most of them aren't really educated, so they're not overly professional. They kind of just say what they're thinking. One person that comes to mind, and I hate bringing up names, but do you know who Eddie Abu is? ABB?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Dr. E is? Am I saying it right?
IBB.
He's always he's a jacked bodybuilder, so people are like, oh, he must
but
know
aside
what he's talking
from
about.
That, he's like, aside from the fact that he's a jacked bodybuilder, obviously his information is not accurate. We're not going to use the word shitty. We'll use the word not accurate. He is still passionate in the way he delivers it, right? He's like, all these fucking idiots, they think that counting calories matters. Don't count calories. This is what you need to do. You need to eat this. And it's just like, the energy is infectious. I don't like his information, but I watch his videos. And I'm like, damn, like, this is an infectious energy, right? So I do think that that is incredibly underrated. I think it's something I can do a better job of too. I feel it's difficult, right? Because we were talking about professionalism, and like when I do videos, I want to make sure that I'm nuanced and I'm not saying anything too ridiculous, and I want to spark some emotion, but at the same time, I want to seem professional. And it almost seems like it's a positive for some of these individuals that don't care about any of that, and they're just like, I'm passionate about it, about this. This is how I talk about it. So I'm really happy that you brought up that point.
Yeah. But remember too, like, I think just like the fat loss clients or the fitness clients, whatever, everybody changes things while they're actually going right. So like, there's someone here probably listening to this when it comes out, that whose business is doing well, that they're going to hear something we say and they're going to go change things and it could potentially get worse.
Sure.
So that was always my thought in my head. People were like, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you do this? Because everything is going very well and changing something for what seems to be better might actually be worse. So it's hard to identify if things are going well.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So don't go out there making crazy changes just because it seems like the right idea. It might not be.
Are you tired of spending countless hours grocery shopping, cooking, and preparing your meals? I get it. Time is precious, and that's where Icon Meals comes into play. I've partnered with Icon Meals to bring you delicious, macro-friendly, and high-protein meals that will make it easier than ever for you to achieve your fitness goals. I understand that you may have hesitations over the cost of a meal prep service compared to cooking food at home. But let's face it, how often do you spend more money eating out because you didn't have time to prepare your food at home anyways? With Icon Meals, you not only save time, but you invest in your health. These meals are carefully crafted to be healthier and more in line with your fitness goals than most of the food that you eat out anyways. So why wait? Visit iconmeals.com and explore their wide array of mouth-watering meals. And as a special bonus for listening to this podcast, use code JOSEPH10 at checkout for a special discount off of your order. By the way, you can find all of the necessary links in the description of this podcast. Don't let time be a barrier to your success. Choose Icon Meals and fuel your journey towards a healthier, fitter you.
Yeah, you certainly have to be calculated about what you do. This is something I've been doing with social media a ton. Like, as I was mentioning, I've had more success in the past 8 months than I had in the previous like 4 years together. And a couple of my friends who do social media and stuff too, they've been asking like, oh, how'd you do that? What have you been doing? And realistically, like, I really only share one tip, which is I'm analytical about what is doing well, and I try to do more of that. I also analyze, quote unquote, other peers in my circle that are doing better than I am, and I try to see what they're doing well that I'm not doing and try to implement those things. And if you're methodical and you're analytical and you test and it's trial and error, it's quite easy to continue to progress. Maybe some people progress quicker than others for different reasons, but if you do those things, if you're really analytical and you pay attention, it's not that difficult to figure out what does well and what doesn't do well, right?
Yeah. It's probably people aren't looking at the metrics that Instagram can give. They're just like the emotional eaters. They just kind of go off of what they think.
Yeah. Dude, one thing I wanted to ask, and this is transitioning from, you know, we've talked about for starting coaches, what's the most important thing you need to do to be able to get started. From there, how do you work on getting clients and marketing? And I know we haven't gotten super in depth on those topics, but I think we've given some really good snippets that are helpful for those individuals in those positions. Now let's go a little bit further. And to be honest, this is a little bit of a selfish question because it's where I find myself at the moment as well. Let's say you've been doing this for a while and you're at a point where you have success with your strategy for getting clients. You feel pretty comfortable having a fairly full client load. You feel good with the income you're making. Personally, I also feel like I have very little time with the amount of work that I'm putting in. And perhaps you're in a position where you're really considering transitioning into scaling your business while simultaneously maybe delegating some work so you don't have to do everything. One thing that I've found is difficult is when you try to do something like that and you have other individuals providing the service that you originally provided, It becomes difficult in the sense that you have to start thinking differently, right? From the perspective of developing frameworks of, hey, this is how we do this. This is how we do that. It's not just you doing it. So how do you, what tips would you have for somebody going through that sort of transition?
There's a lot there. I think the first thing is like, what I picked up there was the time thing. Like you want more time.
Sure.
So that probably is more help to do things that you are either doing now or plan to do in the future. So to me, hiring is always, it might have been our superpower. We just always hired the right people. So if you can find the right person, which is incredibly difficult because you're going to need a specific type of person to do this job. You don't know exactly where they are. You don't know how to test them to see if they can do this job.
Yeah.
So like my first piece of advice is like find out what it is. What is the problem you want to solve? Where are these people that can potentially solve it? How do you know that they are going to be good for you? It's probably assessments and interviews and things like that. Those were gold for us, assessments for coaches. That would tell us, and we would ask a unique question. I think it was unique. We would say, who are some of the industry leaders that you follow? I forget exactly how we worded it, but huge red flags revealed on that. Like, I mean, you know, some of the names that were probably on that. That was like, oh, wow, you learn from him. This is not going to go well. It's not going to go well because our members are going to ask you a question, whether it's in our group or in your email. And if you give them information that conflicts with the philosophies of this company, they're like, where am I?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you have to ask these questions. You have to put them through the tests of what you're going to want to see, how they respond, when are they available, things like that. If they have super hard boundaries, maybe they're not the right person for you. So those are some of the things I would think about. And it's also like humans are weird about stagnation. Like we always want to progress in some way. Mm-hmm. Like you could be exactly, whether I'm talking to you or some other listener, you could be exactly where you're supposed to be. And if you just did this forever, is that not a great life? Like maybe it is.
Yeah.
So you have to, like the Mexican fisherman parable that we talked about, where there's a guy on the beach, I think fishing, and a businessman walks up to him. He's like, hey, if you had more fishing boats, you could make so much more money. And ultimately, what that fisherman would get is exactly what he has now. So do you just want more because you think you need more? Like I'm in a unique position where I can tell people, like it probably doesn't feel like you think it's going to feel when you grow and you have a high income and you sell a business and retire at 40 years old. It does not feel like you think. What it does is reminds you of everything that matters, which is probably what most people have or can attain. They're just not paying attention.
Yeah.
And that's like the message. Like if I do another business, it's something around that. Like that is just helping people find what actually makes people happy. It's pretty simple stuff. It's just that we're not paying attention to it and we're not gamifying it and implementing it.
Yeah. It's a really good perspective, right? Because And talking here from a personal perspective now, the way that I view it is, if I never progressed from where I am at the moment, and this is what I did, would I be happy? Certainly. And the reason why I say that confidently is because I'm happy now. Like I'm happy, right? But I'm the type of person that finds a ton of joy in the pursuit of progress itself. So like, let's say I wasn't doing this, right? Like trying to grow a coaching business. Like, well, prior to this, I played musical instruments, the guitar and the saxophone. And I just had like the aspect of just getting better was fun. And when it comes to like video games, I can have an addictive personality because if I put more time in, I get better, right? So that's what I think it is for some people, right? And I think as long as you acknowledge what your driving force is, it's not bad to necessarily want more. I think it's only bad in the sense if you're just chasing more for the sake of having more and don't necessarily know what makes you happy, right? I know what makes me happy. Doing stuff that's fun. Doing this stuff is fun. I enjoy working with clients, but I also enjoy like figuring out almost like a puzzle, because it is a puzzle, right? Which moving piece to pull, and like the growth of the business is just a metric that tells me that I'm doing the right thing. And then I enjoy hanging out with my wife, my son. I like being at home, working out. I get to do all of those other things, right? So I love that perspective because I don't want people to think either that striving for more is inherently a bad thing, because that's not true.
Right.
It really comes down to what the motivating factors are.
It just, right. It can't be in the quest of filling a hole, right? Like, because I'm a moderator on Reddit of Fat Fire, basically financial independence, retire early, but with more money than just pinching pennies. Everyone in there who's like, I just retired, I sold my business, or I'm an investment banker or whatever. I've been retired for 6 months. I'm miserable.
Yeah.
Well, it's because you thought money in retirement was going to be the hole that filled something that is unfillable with money.
Yeah.
And we're in this, like, there's a book that everybody should read. It's called Burnout Society. I forget the author. Bayul. I got to get it for you.
Okay.
It's so good. It talks so much about achievement society and how much so much of our lives are geared towards achieve more, achieve more, achieve more. And it's almost always regarding our career.
Yes.
And even when you have it, like, you get used to it and you just want more and you're just influenced to get more. What? And it's not even money. It could just be promotion or notoriety. Like, we have to question ourselves why we always want more.
Yeah.
And that's something, like, when I sold the business and my identity was just changed overnight. And, like, I left the business 15 months in. It was like, who am I? What do I do? And I started to feel like, you're a lazy shit, Mike. Like, you don't do anything to achieve traditional success anymore. It's like, but I already did that. Can I not do that in other areas? So I'll have to share, like, I have this framework I'm working on that I'll have to share with you. I don't want to talk about it now because I'll probably butcher it. But it's so helpful for people like us that want to progress, but don't just need it to be around career. And I feel like that's so much of, like, so much advice now is, like, how to thrive in your career. It's masquerading as self-help, but it's really telling you to do better in your career and make more money. And that's not necessarily the case for everybody.
Yeah. And it's, you see people who just obviously drown themselves in their career. And again, I'm not trying to say that these things are bad, right? Because some people, like, that's what they want. But as you mentioned, that can be an action to mask or drown out other things that are perhaps lacking in their life. And like you mentioned, if you retire early and then you're not working anymore, what do you do? You don't have anything you enjoy. Like, your whole identity was work. Like, you don't have, I'm making generalizations here, but a lot of people who do that don't have successful or great family life, right? And it's difficult, man. And for me, you know, like, my son is 18 months old. Mm-hmm. And my wife is a stay-at-home mom, and that's a decision that both, really, that she made, but that I supported her on, because for us, nothing makes more sense than her being home with the kid all day if she wants to and she does want to. And it's a great arrangement, right? Now, I've seen the direct impact it's had on even just, like, how productive I can be with work, because it takes time and all of this. And, you know, it's still something that I have to work on. But at first, it would really bother me. And my wife and I had conversations about this. Like, for example, I work from home. So realistically, I am available to help her if she needs me immediately, right? And she would say, like, hey, let's say it's 10:30 in the morning and I'm sitting here on this desk doing some work. And she's like, hey, can you watch the kid for 10 minutes? I'm like, no, I can't, because I'm working. It's like, a lot of times when I'm working, I'm on my phone. Like, yes, I definitely have 10 minutes. But we create this idea of, like, no, we have to work, and I can't take a break for this. And it's just such a silly way of thinking. And I know I'm going on different tangents here.
No, dude, this is me. This, I sold the business, but I was still so into it. And then we had the kid, and, like, through the wall of my office is, like, the little playroom. I hear either my wife struggling over there or having a blast. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I just lost interest. I just wanted to dedicate my time to the kids and the family. And then we had another kid. And that's when I was like, all right, my wife is pregnant with girl number two. I'm hanging it up, guys. I'm going to just be dad, because I didn't want to deal with that anymore. And I felt like the business was in good hands. They'll be fine. And it's a weird place to be, because I was such a different person when I was in work mode. I was just into it.
Yeah.
But there's a cost to that. Right. And I didn't feel like personally giving that up. Like, I had my enough number. I had my enough feeling in terms of, like, achievement and career. And I wanted to be just this dude. And there was probably, like, honestly, there was probably some ego in there that, oh, I could retire at 40. Let me do it. But because, like, previous Mike thought he was going to work until the day he died. Mm. An old man in an office.
Yeah.
So I'm like, screw that. I get one chance at this. And, like, your career too, like working online, you have access to your family that most men do not. And it's something very special. And like, we can't take that for granted, you know? So I was like, fuck this. I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm no reason for me to be on a Zoom meeting where I can't pull the strings like I used to. So let me step back.
Yeah. So
it was a very selfish decision, you know?
Yeah. Even as you're saying that, I'm thinking like, oh man, I envy Mike. I would love to be in a position where I could just hang out with my son all day because I really enjoy it. Like, I would definitely want.
A lot of people don't. I have friends that are like, my favorite time of the week is Monday. Dude. And I'm like, well, that sucks, but I get it. Shit's crazy. And I'm in a position that's different, right? It's very different over here. So I get it. But I love it. But just like building the company, people used to say, I could never do that. And it's like, yeah, because I'm probably crazy. There's some crazy there. There has to be, man.
But it's also, I think it's also the fact that people have a really hard time finding joy in the little things. As cliche as that sounds. When people, for example, like we have friends that are newer parents and similarly, they like cannot wait to get away from the kid. Right. And like, don't get me wrong. Parenting is tough. There are times where you want to break. Sure. But overall,
bedtime
it's really fun, right. Right? It's really fun to see the baby doing this. And now they're saying that word and they laugh at this. And some people don't find joy in those things, man. And I can find myself sometimes thinking too, because as a dad, it's harder to connect with a newborn baby compared to mom, right? It's a mate connection. 100%. And as a dad, I'm like, man, I can't wait till my son is maybe 4 or 5 and he wants to play with a ball. And then I catch myself. I'm like, he's great right now. Don't rush. Enjoy this, right? It's tough.
We talk about that because ours are 2.5 and 9 months. Okay. It is very hard to leave the house with naps, conflicting, just the trouble of getting them all ready. Yeah. But so sometimes we're like, oh, I can't wait until they're both running around. But then it's like, but then we don't have these moments. Yeah. So it's just, that's life. Life is just a series of these little magical moments that we just have to hold on to and remember the present.
Yeah.
Just like think about what's happening in front of you because it's going to be over so soon. And that was such a catalyst for my decision to leave the business was that if I'm an old man, what am I going to want? More money that I don't need or time with my little kids and my wife.
Yeah. It's such a great way of putting it, man. And like, I think we can both agree that it is easier said than done, right? But it's important to just remind yourself of these things frequently. Dude, I want to be respectful of your time. There's a couple more things I want to talk about, but only if you're...
I'm good if you want to roll. Yeah. I'm good.
Sure, man.
Yeah, I have probably another 20 minutes if you
Okay, cool. That's perfect. I wanted to ask you some questions in the sense of you've been there, done that, right? So... And I think a lot of people who are coaches who are listening to this can relate to this question as well. Going from a point where you are a solopreneur, your whole business is around your identity, right? People, even though my company is Fit for Life Academy, people hire me because of me, not because of the company, right? What are your thoughts around a personal brand versus developing a business brand? Is there a good time to do that? Is it necessary? I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
So I'll say this to start. I don't think this story would have had a chance if I was Mike Dola Nutrition. I think it's like Hootie and the Blowfish. Who the hell are the Blowfish?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Dave Matthews Band. Who's in the band? Yeah. Unless you're a fan. So it's like maybe. But I mean there's a cost associated to it. Like none of these answers are black and white.
Sure.
Because like Mike Dola Nutrition is obviously identifiable with me. Stronger You is just a business that guy owns.
Sure.
But I think if you want to grow the business and you want it to be bigger than yourself while still being a part of it, I think naming it something other than yourself is a good thing. But I think you should always humanize that brand. And I think that's like when I sold the business, I was probably removed a little bit from the identity, which makes sense because if I go away, then that's a big problem.
Yeah.
So you don't want to make a business just rely on you, but you want to be the thing that makes everyone involved with the business better.
Yeah.
From the brand identity, the vibe, the culture, all that stuff. So I think you can have it both ways. And the name is just like the name.
Yeah. No, that's a great point of view. And at the end of the day, like you mentioned, if you want to build something that's bigger than you, it's important to build that brand simultaneously, right? It's not one or the other. Yeah. And I think for most of us who are solopreneurs, it's your name carries the most weight at first. And then even maybe from the beginning, you have a separate entity for your business, but really nobody's going to your business because of your business. Like people are going to your business because of you. And then that transition, again, I'm not going to say it's where I'm at the moment, but it's something I find myself thinking about of like, okay, I have this brand for my coaching business, which is Fit for Life Academy, but I don't necessarily have a social media profile set up for it. I don't post regularly on the socials. I just do it on my own. It seems overwhelming to think of having a whole separate, account to create content for. So that's where that question really came from. But then
I might not even do it then, because I see so many solo people that have a business and they're just, for example, they'll have 100,000 followers on their personal. They'll have 6,000 on their business. Yeah. So it's like, no one cares about that. Just, you can have your business. It just doesn't have to be its own thing. But I mean, it can be, but you know how these algorithms are. Yeah. Like the algorithm doesn't want to reward businesses. It wants to highlight people.
Yeah. That's a good perspective as well, man. Dude, so last couple of things I wanted to ask you, what does Mike's life look like now that you don't work all day? What's a day in life like?
It's interesting. I was joking about this with an old friend and colleague. It's crazy because as little as I have to do, I always have a lot to do. Like you know how it is with kids. I have two of them. So my wife and I are pretty much home all day with them. We do everything together from like waking them up, feeding them, putting them to bed. And then in there somewhere is usually maybe some reading for both of us, workouts. Maybe one of us will go to a coffee shop for a little while one of them naps to make it easy. And that's it. Like there are probably people that are listening to this that are like, oh, that's so cool. I want to do that. But it's like most of my day is very boring, but it's 24 hours of little moments that I love.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not for everybody. So if you're trying to be exciting and go bungee jumping and parasailing and all this crazy stuff, that is not me. Maybe one day I will get into the more exciting stuff. But right now, I am living the most boring life in existence. All I do really is dad stuff, workout, and talk to my friends.
Dude, you and I have a lot of parallels. You know, I was thinking everything you're saying now also relates to the exact same thing that we were talking about in terms of wanting more for the sake of wanting more. Yeah. And like, why? Because you might have what you want already. And the whole thing that you were saying about the fisherman, right? Like, I also find joy in quote unquote being boring. Like, I don't find it boring.
Yeah.
But it's like some people, I guess people are wired differently too. And it's hard for you or I to understand how other people feel about things, right? Because some people need to go on wild adventures and do this and always look forward. There's nothing wrong with it, right? It's just like, that's not necessarily the way I'm wired. And yes, I look forward to things like vacation and stuff, but the day-to-day is really what I enjoy, right? Like putting my bed to sun, like you mentioned, hanging out with him for 2 hours before bed when I'm done with work, going to the gym every day. Like every day pretty much looks exactly the same, but it's really enjoyable. I don't know if that's something that can be taught or learned, or it's just wired in your DNA.
I think it can be taught. I think there's a good book called 4,000 Weeks that was so good at recognizing like just this, everyone wants to be productive all the time and experience everything. And it's like, you cannot experience everything. So just get that thought out of your head. Like, and I think about this, like, oh, maybe one day I want to learn guitar. I want to learn how to surf. I want to do this. I want to do that. I probably will never even scratch the surface of all these cool things that I think I want to do, but I'm okay with that because what I am doing is so like, it fills my cup so much. And, you know, time, like we don't have that much time, but we also kind of do. So like these kids will be a little older. I'll get to the things that maybe I'm curious about. And I think there's just this issue with desire and ownership. Like desire always feels so much better than ownership. Like desire always feels better than experience. So like right now, if I'm like, oh, if I could be in on a Mexican beach right now, that'd be amazing. But also I'm going to see my kid in like 5 minutes and we're going to go to swim lessons and it's going to be the coolest thing. Like seeing her little ass floating around like that. Like I've experienced so much. My wife and I have traveled to so many different places and nothing beats bedtime, you know?
I will say though, we, I don't know what your bedtime routine looks like, but we rock our son to sleep every night and we alternate nights. And although it's great, some nights I want to pull my hair out.
I get you.
And my son has this little habit of like sticking his hands in my armpits and he just keeps going and keeps going. I'm like, dude, chill out.
You gotta rip the Band-Aid off. Just put them down, run away, and get far away so you don't hear them.
My wife will not.
But the parenting industry, the parenting industry is like the food industry. It's full of pretty good advice, but it'll make you feel like an absolute failure if you don't do everything perfect. And like screens and this and that, dude. It's wild, but. Yeah. So
awesome, Mike. Well, man, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And I really like the way this conversation went. And I really appreciate being able to get to learn a little bit more about you. Do you mind sharing with the audience if they want to connect with you, where they can find you on social media?
Yeah. At Mike Dola, Instagram. And I don't know if Joey knows this, but I put myself out there. You have questions. You're in the business. You want some advice. I'm happy to help. And I tell this to everyone. Not enough people hit me up. I think maybe they think I'm busier than I am, but really remember guys, I'm just here playing with my kids.
Dude. No, it's funny. Cause that's how you and I connected. You sent me a message. Yep. I think it was that you liked my content and we connected there. And, I'm happy we did this and I'm definitely going to take you up on that offer. Cause I would love to get you.
Dude. Happy to chat, man. This was so fun. Thank you, Joey.
Thank you, man. We'll catch up. And guys, for those of you that want to follow him, his stuff's going to be in the description. So if you scroll down, you'll find it there. Thank you guys for listening to the entire episode. If you enjoy it, don't forget to leave a rating and review the podcast. See you guys.